Oh, the strangest of mornings in the EPL. This is the Love Sport Podcast EPL edition. The crew's just going to talk about the last few games of the season coming up and just a dramatic morning in Premier League with relegation teams scoring everywhere, 21 goals in the one morning. It is indeed, indeed a strange, strange world.
Doucouré's unmarked. Here he is. Oh, what a finish. Best and disarray. Taiwo Awoniyi.
It was chaotic with the way that they were trying to defend that. They never really looked comfortable. And in the end, it's a terrific finish from Awoniyi. It really is. Spinning and hitting that one on the volley. You watching Awoniyi on the penalty spot right there.
Welcome to another Love Sport podcast. It's Paul, it's Pete, it's John. How are we, boys?
Sensational. How about yourself, my friend?
I'm sensational as well. John?
Well, I'm very well, Paul, and I do appreciate your kind inquiry. Thank you.
Beautiful. Guys, this is an EPL special today. There's a few rounds to go. I couldn't think of anything better than to talk the wonderful game with you boys. We will start off with this morning. I was telling John earlier, Pete, I couldn't sleep. And so I watched the first game, fell asleep, ended up watching the next two. Who would have picked in relegation battles 21 goals on a Tuesday morning?
Yeah, I think this was a Premier League record as well, if I remember correctly, of seeing the highest number of goals scored across a three-game morning or a three-game evening series from memory. So a weird little fact there. But yeah, look, absolute bonkers. I think we always knew that the relegation scrap was always going to bring something special to this. I don't think anyone expected to kind of hit the headlines the way that it has. And you know, there's still plenty of drama yet to come over the final three games of the season. But, yeah, it was definitely all to play this morning between Fulham, Leicester, Brighton, Everton, and then Forest and Southampton.
Well, let's start off with the Fulham-Leicester game, guys. This was absolutely nuts. Fulham looked in complete control of this game. I think Leicester, well, they definitely missed a Vardy penalty. I saw that one. I'm not sure how many times they missed opportunities, but Fulham looked like they were scoring for fun, of course, when you score five goals. But, you know, Vardy misses a penalty, Barnes and Maddison score their goals, and it just kind of sums up Leicester. They've got really, really good players, but then there's a big gap between their best and worst players. And it must be a bit frustrating for Fulham as well, because at one stage they looked like they were going to have a really good season. It's not a dreadful season. You know, they're going to finish top 10, but they'd have to be disappointed. They looked right up there for a bit in the season.
Yeah, and I don't think that it's, too far away from where Fulham kind of wanted to be. It's a realistic target of where they are. And I think that, you know, the opening 20-odd minutes, I think Fulham definitely would have been, you know, full of energy and buzzing, especially being at the Cottage to be able to see that kind of a performance. And I think actually Leicester City's James Maddison summed it up really well in the post-game interview, where he actually was incredibly honest. He didn't do the apologies to the fans to quintessential speech. He instead basically just said, yeah, you know what, it was all on us. We started poorly. We didn't have the energy that we needed into this game. We tried to dig in as the game went on, but it wasn't to be. And you know what, this could be the type of game that kind of sums up Leicester City as a whole. And I'm sure that, John, you would probably agree that, you know, if Leicester go down, this could be one of those types of games that we reflect back on and say, sliding doors moments, what could have been?
That's true. I think what it did show is they're all terrible defending.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
And I think that's really the key thing about all this, because, I mean, goals have been flying in all around the Premier League in the last month or so, and not the least coming from my mob. But at this last night, I think Leicester's defence has been appalling all year, and there's some big names in there. It's not always, I mean, they scored okay, but their defensive organisation, their midfield work rate's atrocious, and yeah. You get what you get. And I mean, Wout Fass in so many ways reminds me of David Luiz, except he doesn't have the quality at the other end of the pitch.
Yeah, it's a fair call.
How much do you think it comes down to the fact that there's not been a proper replacement for Kasper Schmeichel between the posts?
Well, a lot, and everybody knows that a lot. But I mean, he's still not the defenders. I mean, if the goalkeeper's going to organise you and stuff like that and save a game here or there, I can't believe quite that they let that happen. But they let a lot of other people just wander out the door, and they seem to be in a never easy. Hey, you know what? They can't defend, and it's pretty hard to score six.
It is.
If that's your get out of jail plan, it was interesting. I can't remember who it said. It might have been Michael Owen said that, you know, now everybody's not sitting back in the bottom. At the bottom of the ladder, trying to nick a result, they're all going for it. And you know what? I tell you what, it's fun to watch.
You know what, John? They actually said that in all three games at some stage, and then post game in the in a lot of the coverage as well. Look, fantastic games for the neutrals. Just absolutely so many goals going in. The next game, I cannot see anyone in the world that would have seen this come. There's no way anyone would see Everton beating Brighton, and because Brighton has been playing some of the most beautiful football this season of any of the teams, plus 18 goal difference, and they conceded a ninth of their goals of the season in one game.
To add to that stat, Everton scored a tenth of, basically 10% of their goals were scored in this game alone from memory.
Actually, closer to 16%.
16%, there you go. How good's that? Like, you know, how bonkers is that from Everton, the fact that you get a stat like that in a game against a Brighton and Hove, which, as you quite rightly say there, Brighton are flying high and have been in fantastic form. I think if you kind of looked at through Twitter, the most searched up manager at the moment is De Zerbi, and everyone's trying to really understand and break down De Zerbi's style of play and what Brighton do, especially in build-up play, how vertical they like to play their football and how aggressive it can be in the front third. And look, to be able to see what Everton were able to do, I think it summed up really well with Sean Dyche in the post-game interview, where he basically just explained, look, this has somewhat been coming from Everton, that they were bound to be able to put in a strong performance. It was overdue. It was just fortuitous that it's kind of happened at the right moment. And you know, Everton played roughly 25-30% of the ball. They sat, like, they might have defended a lot of the time, but they defended in a good mid-block, so they were still able to counter-attack quickly. They were still able to be aggressive in that front third. And that there, brilliant.
I don't know if I buy Sean Dyche's thing that this was coming, because they've been you know, you could mount a case to say that in the bottom six, they've been the worst performing club to what they just looked atrocious everywhere. And that,
yep.
And that also includes, as opposed to our friends at Leicester, going forward.
Well, guys, can you let me give you some stats? Because I'm stat driven today, aren't I? I'll just give you some stats right here. This is one team. One team had 78% of possession. The expected goals, which I hate because it never seems right to me, were 3. 23 shots, 5 big chances, 4 big chances missed, 657 passes at 89%, 15 corners, and they get beaten 5-1. That's actually Brighton's stats. Now,
well, maybe it's not a bad idea to actually sit on the back foot sometimes and just come at you.
Well, listen to this, though, and I'm not sure if I've ever seen a stat like this. 144 accurate passes by Everton for 5 goals. So what's that? A goal for every 28.8% of accurate passes, they got a goal.
Yeah, but of that, Everton connected, well, they attempted 221 passes. So if you think about it, that is an incredibly accurate moment. When they did have the ball, they worked damn hard for it. Like we say, that is, well, based on what Optus Sport is saying, they only had 22% of the ball. So when they did have it, they were very effective with it. When they didn't have it, they were more than happy to sit.
It's a very Sean. It's a very effective. You know what? It's one of those things that's disappeared from the game. And I think if you, I'm no Bruno Conte, but if you are going to really go hard at what was the big lesson we took from the World Cup? If you shove a big centre forward in the middle of the field and you bomb balls in over the centre forwards who are trained to play up and out, you can find them out. Now you can do that with a fast player. You can do it with a big guy.
Yep.
I don't think it's that uncommon to see these big, skillful centre halves just getting taken out by straight or diagonal balls in behind.
No, exactly right, and it's happening more and more. Final game of the morning, 5 o'clock kickoff for most of us. Nottingham Forest at home led the bottom team, basically relegated Southampton. They led them 2-0, 3-1, 4-2, 1-4-3. It was pleasure and hell if you're a Forest fan there. It was one of those games, and I thought Ward-Prowse for Southampton, his passing and his set pieces was amazing. But Nottingham Forest thoroughly deserved it. And I've got to say, the atmosphere for all three games was amazing. And I want to go back to that Brighton game just quickly. The away fans who travelled for Everton were so bloody loud at Brighton this morning. Honestly, they were ferocious. It was amazing and good on them, because it's been a hard season for travelling away for Everton. And Forest... Oh, mate, that atmosphere there was really, really good. And you could hear the Saints fans singing as well, when the Saints go marching in and all that. So the atmosphere from all the fans this morning was first rate. And that's why sometimes it is, you know, if you're a middle to smaller team, you can really feel the passion from your fans sometimes. The bigger your base gets, sometimes it seems to dissipate. But that game this morning, I'm not sure if you saw that one, Pete. It was all over the place.
Yeah, well, as you kind of mentioned there with the effect of the crowd, it's one of those magical things where when you go to a smaller team, there is the atmosphere that kind of – the crowd can almost draw the ball towards the goal at times because of how they're chanting, and it's that magical feeling around it. Like, you look at Forest, for instance, they only had 9 shots, 4 of those on target and scored 4. Yeah. So you know what? They played without the ball a lot of the game, but when they did get it, they were effective in the front third. They were able to finish things. They created plenty of, intercepts in the front third. You know, they were aggressive. They definitely did cause a lot of fouls in this game. But, you know, there was a lot of heart shown by these Forest fans and by the Forest players on the park as well. But one question I'd love to throw at both of you is, if Southampton are, in fact, about to get relegated, which, you know, you'd almost bank your house that they would end up going down. Would you want James Ward-Prowse at your club?
I would. I think he'd be a good squad player. I don't think he'd be a first-team player for most clubs at the moment, but he'd definitely be a good squad player.
It's been a fairly common topic on all the Newcastle chats and stuff. And, you know, I tend to agree with Paul. And it's sort of, it's in keeping with the rest of my reflections on Southampton. When I was watching them today, I thought this would have been a crackerjack lineup in 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some huge names, but they're all like, you know, getting around on walking sticks.
Well, Bednarak earlier in the year was on loan to Villa, and he was slated at Villa. And, you know, so I couldn't imagine he'd be going to too many other places. Walcott looks like he's had his chances in his career. He's 34 years of age now. I still think Trey Adams can do something somewhere. I mean, I think he'd be a sensational championship player. He's not going to walk into any other Premier League squad. I'm not sure who else you think would be worthwhile there, especially you, Pete. I'm not sure who you know, Walker's Peters, you know, would he be, you know, 20, he'd be 25, 26. I think he'd be worth it somewhere.
Yeah, look, as you say, Walker's Peters, he's 26, so he's of a good age as a right back. You know, as we know, England have plenty of right backs to consider. Maitland-Niles has had opportunities as well. I think that he's looked good at the moment. Bednarek, centre back, 27-year-old Polish defender. You know, good opportunities for him to look at playing at another Premier League side, potentially having a Premier League side.
Pete, having watched him play for Villa, he looks a bit slow.
Yeah, look, he is. He's a very interesting character. And then, you know, Shay Adams up top, you know, 26-year-old, is a decent striker at times. He gets in good areas. Is he the type of guy who's going to be finishing week in, week out? The answer is obviously no, because it hasn't happened this year. But he's the type of a player who could find himself playing football elsewhere for Southampton. And yeah, it's an interesting one. I don't think that there's a whole lot of quality amongst that lineup that you would say would kind of walk into other teams. But yeah, James Ward-Prowse, there's obviously a lot rumoured about where he's going to end up. Tottenham, West Ham and Newcastle are favourites at the moment as destinations. I wouldn't be surprised if we did see him at West Ham. But, you know, there's a few outlier options as well. As we know, Liverpool need a complete rebuild in central midfield. So potentially he's a central midfielder who could come in as a squad player there.
Yeah, I think if Leicester go down, there'll be a lot more picking over the carcass than...
Absolutely agreed.
I agree there as well. If Leeds go down, they've got one or two very good young players, but I think I don't think they're going to have too many players if they do go down that people are going to pick there. Guys, if we could go back a day as well, West Ham beating Man United, they're Jekyll and Hyde Man United. West Ham, you know, that's a win that puts them, but it'd be very hard to see them not being in safety after that game. And that game could have been any kind of score as well.
Yeah, look, it definitely could have been. I think West Ham fans, if anything, they're probably more focused on what's going on in the Europa Conference League and whether or not they can potentially pick up a trophy there. Because the thing is, Premier League-wise, they know they're in a good position. They know that, you know, they've achieved in a positive way. It's probably not as high up the table as they would like to be. You know, it's currently sitting on 15th. I feel like they would prefer to be a top half of the table type of a side. But as I say, they probably switch their attention now towards the Conference League to try and see if they can pick up a trophy. I think the biggest talking point from this game between West Ham and Manchester United is actually all about David De Gea.
Oh my God.
32-year-old whose contract expires at the end of this year. Yes, he does have an opportunity to have a 1 year extension if Manchester United agree, but good gosh, a lot of question marks over a guy who kind of drops a regulation catch.
Well, he does it too regularly, and I was talking to a couple of people yesterday about it. And for a club that spent so much money, has aspirations to be up the top again, the fact that they haven't been able to, either they haven't been able to, or they haven't tried to replace their keeper, it's been a bit of a shock. They'll spend fortune on midfielders and strikers, but it doesn't feel like they're spending any money on their back line.
Yep, scary times ahead. And the thing is, if you think about who their backup goalkeeper is, from memory, it's Jack Butland as the second choice goalkeeper. And then once you start going down the list, you've got Tom Heaton and Nathan Bishop. So to be fair, in the nicest way possible, there's not a great deal of depth in terms of the goalkeeping ranks for Manchester United.
Back from online, remember? He was online over there. He didn't get 1 minute.
Yeah, but he did pick up a trophy. Oh, sorry, he did pick up his own little medal. So, you know, there is a little positive for Dubravka.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other game of the morning, and I know that your team was on the bad end of this, but it's a game that either team could have had that same scoreline or if not more goals. It was a really fun game. The first 20 minutes, I thought Newcastle were absolutely dominant over Arsenal. And then Arsenal away from home, really strong atmosphere, a sensational win for Arsenal. I'm sorry to say that, John, but, you know, it could have, in the first 20 minutes, you could have had two on the board.
Well, I'm realistic. I mean, they're second on the ladder for a reason and still chasing the title, and we're third. I thought it was a game that showed all of those qualities, and, you know, a little bit here or there, and the rub of the green, you know, Jacob Murphy probably, in fairness, should have scored, but that first hit the post.
Yep.
I honestly, I'm not going to complain about decisions, but right or wrong, but I don't actually have any idea what constitutes a handball or a decision anymore. I don't know. You got referees giving them, then rubbing them out. You've got them missing them and then giving them over. And I just really, you know what? I just go back to letting the referee make the decision and whatever stands, stands.
Mate, I saw two games in a week, and if not three, where the player's hand, and I know in our game against Wolves, we played terribly, but Villa, one of the Wolves players, his hand was way outside his body, hits his hand, a player right behind him in a scoring position, and it wasn't even referred. Like, I don't know what... I hear what you're saying, and I think we've all come to that at the moment. I'd rather not have VAR.
No, I'm not complaining about the decision that was made per se, but what I'm saying is I'm kind of sick of the fact that there's so many grey areas, or how it, you know what, it hit the guy's hand, right? He's in the penalty box. He's a mile away from the ball. It's like, it's a handball to me.
Well,
forever and a day.
Well, gents, here's this one for you. How about we get the guys from Premier League to put on their little capes and come to save the day, in which case the Premier League productions team have said that a new pilot show will start from Monday, the 15th of May, which is actually the same evening that Leicester and Liverpool end up playing, whereby this TV show will be a half-hour production from the Premier League where they discuss all the referees' decisions, VAR decisions. You'll actually be able to hear some of the commentary from the referees from the game, sorry, not live, but it'll be a post-production decision. So you'll end up having a number of referees on the show being able to discuss the decisions being made.
Absolutely appalling, Pete.
100%.
I got to tell you this, and my theory is very much this, is that, hey, we've all watched the NRL, right? And we hear the mic'd up referees for years. It's one of the worst things that ever happened to the game. I don't think it helps anyone. I think you just turn the referee's microphone off. He makes a decision. You can critique it, but then don't interview everyone about it. And one of the worst aspects of NFL watching is the umpiring specialist. And they seem to never know whether they're Arthur or Martha anyway. And it's like, please, no. Just make your call. Get on with it.
Yep. So, guys, Norway is having a bit of a golden run at the moment in the Premier League, isn't it? Because if we said a guy is scoring these last four or five games in a row, you would think it might be someone else. But Odegaard is on fire. I think he's broken a Premier League record for a midfielder, 15 goals and 7 assists. There was people worried about how effective he would be. It takes a while to acclimatise. The guy is 24 years of age. You're a midfielder with 15 goals and 7 assists. That is an absolutely outstanding season.
Well, I this is the last thing I'm going to say about this game because I'll defer to other to you two. But the other thing that kind of irks me is that when you see like a fantastic strike like that, everybody's got to break down. Oh, my God, the defense. It's like sometimes a guy just hits it. And everybody can't be everywhere perfectly all the time. It's humans. You know, ball goes through legs, whatever. It just found the right spot. And I take my hat off to Odegaard because he'd been doing that all year. And he's an awesome player. And I really didn't enjoy that goal, but I enjoyed the goal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, look, it does. I mean, I absolutely hear what you're saying. And look, I'm a massive rap on him, and just to see him blossom in the last couple of months has been really good, because believe it or not, he was under pressure, and that's what fans do.
Their whole midfield's been under pressure because you've got Xhaka, who they don't really want.
No.
And you know what? Every time I watch him, he seems to have bossed it this year.
Yeah, Martinelli and Odegaard, and look, it's just a team at the moment, and it's exciting times for them ahead. But, you know, everyone says, oh, they can build on this. And your thoughts, boys, before we go and have a look at the bottom and top of the table, your thoughts here. I think in sport, you don't always get more opportunities. So, you know, Arsenal could go on and win it, but there's so many teams improving that you get these opportunities, you've got to take them.
Yeah, well, look, from our own backyard, I look at Liverpool, and Liverpool have improved immensely over the last three or four games. And if anything, you look at that top half of the table and you go, if anyone could be pushing into the top four at the moment, it's probably Liverpool. And if anyone's going to drop out, it's probably Manchester United at this rate.
Yep, yep. Well, we'll come up to that top of the table in a moment. Let's go look at the bottom of the table. We'll go down from 15th West Ham. They're on 37 points. Their goal difference is not too bad for this time of year, minus 12. Nottingham Forest, what an unbelievably vital win that was, because they draw that game and they'd be outside. They'd still be out of relegation, but they'd be in all sorts of trouble. Everton's win as well takes them out of relegation. So we got West Ham on 37. Do we all agree now they're safe?
Yes, I would back West Ham as being safe.
You need three teams to get above them from that lot below them, and that's not going to happen.
No, so we've got Forest, Everton, Leicester and Leeds all fighting for survival. I mean, theoretically, Southampton can get there, but the chances of that are very unlikely. But they could still, you just never know. But I think we can all probably say that Southampton's down, so... Leeds. I mean, they're the team in my mind most likely to go down. They're next. They're fine.
Oh, game. Big Sam effect, mate. Big Sam.
Well, they still lost to City, even though they played better, right? So here's their next three games, even with Big Sam. They've got Newcastle, West Ham, and Tottenham. I think their best chance to get points are against a potentially distracted West Ham, but they'll be playing them at the London Stadium. I think Newcastle will do an absolute touch-up job on Leeds. I think Newcastle are playing for so... I mean, Leeds are playing for safety. Newcastle are playing for Champions League. So I think Newcastle will absolutely pump them. Who knows what will happen with West Ham? Could be a draw. I mean, they might get a win there. And if they're fighting for survival on the last day against Tottenham, I don't think Tottenham's going to want to do them any favours. And Tottenham could be fighting for a champion or a European spot as well. I think Leeds are down.
Yeah, to be fair, you're probably right there. You're probably right there. And to be honest, based on their season that they have, they deserve to be down there, because it has not been a pretty year for Leeds fans.
Well, they are going to have to find something pretty special against the way that we play. And I think that we play a more refined version of what they did under Bielsa. And they couldn't run with Bielsa, they're not going to be able to run with us.
Well, to be fair, then we'll go through the other teams. So Leicester has Liverpool. They're at home. It is going to be a very tough game. Liverpool has hit all sorts of form. They've also got Newcastle in the next game. I think Newcastle will beat them. And then they also have West Ham in the final game. And who knows where West Ham will be there. So I see Leicester getting, potentially getting 3 points. Out of their final three games, which would take him to 33. And that would mean that Everton, they don't want Everton to score any more points, or Forest. So I think Leicester and Leeds are the ones going down in my mind. But we'll have a quick look at Everton. They've got City. So you'd expect that to be a loss. They've then got Wolves and got Bournemouth on the last day. So I think the bottom three is – my personal belief, I think the bottom three stays as is.
I don't think the Everton ever banked – the Everton fans never banked any points from the Brighton game.
No.
It changed everything changed right there and then. And just for a minute and 5-0, not only that, it totally changes their scoring differential,
which
hurts Leicester as well.
Well, Leicester's got a far superior goal difference. It probably hurts Leeds more than anyone because Leeds are on minus 25.
Oh, of course, I'm looking at the wrong way around. Minus 25. God. I'm so used to being stuck in the same spot as
Leicester. No. That big win by Everton today was the four different goal difference that they've got up on Leeds now.
Yeah, but then what you're saying there then is if it's minus 15 for Leicester, then if Everton squeak a draw and Leicester win, then Leicester would go up.
So,
well, that's got to be on the cards. Well, who's Leicester's three games?
So Leicester have Liverpool, which Liverpool will beat them there. They have Newcastle.
Yeah.
And then they have West Ham, which is the one I think they'll get.
They have to beat them.
Yep.
They have to beat them and hope that Everton only manage to play Everton style of game against Bournemouth. Wolves' form has been pretty good lately.
Wolves' form's been pretty good, but it's up and down and Everton fighting for their life. I mean, it's just amazing that all these teams are playing good teams at the end of the season. But, you know, I still think it'll be Leicester and Leeds going down.
Well, the good news for Newcastle is we've got games against Leicester and Leeds. If we get that 6 points, it means Liverpool can't go above us in the Champions League, so I'll take that.
Well, let's go to the top of the ladder, boys. But before we do, your thoughts on who will go down now?
Southampton, Leeds and Forest.
Yeah, okay. Forest goal difference really smashes them, doesn't it? Because...
hang on, we haven't heard who they've got. Who have they got?
Yes, apologies. They have Chelsea, which you wouldn't say that Forest couldn't get a point.
That's not impossible, though.
They have, well, here's the bad run they've got. They've got Chelsea, and I think that's a good possibility they'll get something out of that. They've got Arsenal. Arsenal will be still fighting for a title. And then they've got Crystal Palace away. But Forest seems to be a team that doesn't, and I could be wrong here, Forest seems to be a team that doesn't hate playing away.
Yeah, well, look, for me, I'm still unfortunately going to be tipping Forest to go down. I think that they're not going to pick up any points over their last three games of the season. I feel like Everton are going to sneakily pick up two or three.
Yep.
And Leicester's going to pick up, they're going to pick up 4 points somewhere across the last three games for me. So,
Forest, Leeds and Southampton down.
Yep, that's for me at the moment.
And yourself, John?
No, well, if Pete's taken Leicester to get 4 points, and I've got to have Everton going down with Leeds.
Well,
I think the eyeball test tells me that I really can't believe how bad Everton were over a stretch, especially under. And I think what we were talking about, when you're talking about a team for 2 years in the same position?
Yeah.
Yep.
That sort of starts to tell its own story right at these crunch times. Back them to get out of this?
Yeah,
I can't do it, and I'm not going to. So I reckon they're in trouble.
What a horrible morning for Leicester and Leeds fans, though, to see Forest and Everton get those huge results this morning.
That's terrible.
That just rips you. That completely does. Let's go up the top of the ladder, boys.
Before we go to the top of the table, can we just celebrate a couple of teams there, like your Wolves, who this week confirmed that they are, you know, safe from relegation, reaching that magical 40-point mark. Crystal Palace, who have been in sensational form over the last couple of games with Uncle Roy Hodgson in charge, who's, you know what, gave a bit of a revival, went back to basics with Palace. They've done well. Look, Frank Lampard with his Chelsea crew, good to see that they're safe from relegation as well after picking up 3 points.
Good to see what money can buy.
Oh, yeah, look, we got to look after the little guys, as we're well aware. And then the rest of the middle of the pack, to be fair, look, from Fulham, Brentford, Villa, Brighton, those four teams should be absolutely buzzing where they are. I think that, look, Villa probably would love to be more in that sixth or seventh fighting for a European Conference League or Europa League spot, but where they are at the moment, happy days.
Hey, mate, we just signed Barcelona's director of football on a massive contract. He's good friends with Emery, and we've just put a production line into Spain. We've made that quite clear. I'm very, very excited. It's Villa's best signing in many a year.
Was he going to send you bankrupt, mate?
No. Come on, mate. He's been there for the last 18 months, and he has actually helped piece together a lot of the mess that he was left. So he hasn't been there in the...
That's nice. He'll have a UNICEF sponsorship soon. That's good.
Mate, if it's going to sell a lot of shirts around the world, I'll do that. But no, he's been good everywhere he's gone. Mate, if you have a look at what he's done in Spain at other clubs, he's going to be very, very good for Villa. And they've spent a fortune on getting him across. And it means that instead of having one of your financial gurus in charge of the football department, you've actually got a football person in charge. And we know what that's done to other clubs. Like,
it's actually a fairly exciting appointment, to be fair. So congratulations. Well,
no, done. I'm really excited. And I held off on Villa there for a little bit. But Liverpool definitely up the top of the team. It must kind of shit you to an extent, Pete, to see what they're doing now with that kind of malaise that they had halfway through the season. To see what they're doing now, you must wonder what could have been.
The answer is yes and no, because the thing is, if I look at the number of players who were injured, I think that Liverpool actually topped the charts in terms of number of injuries in this Premier League season. Last time I checked, that they were at a total number of 70 injuries this season, and that is around about 25 to 30 above the next closest side. So from that perspective, look, no surprise. Also, unfortunately, we've kind of papered over a couple of the little cracks. It's obviously the Sadio Mane effect up top has really affected the balance, the David Luiz injury up top, the fact that Nunes has been unable to find the back of the net on a consistent basis has been huge. Defensively, it's been incredibly poor. So, to be honest, the fact that Liverpool are still there in that top five and they've won five out of the last five Premier League games, I'm buzzing because, to be fair, they're in good form.
Well, I was waiting for this for you, Pete, because I went through and had a look at a few different things. And since April the 1st, you were absolutely thumped by Man City and everyone was piling into Klopp out and all different things. You drew your next two games, one against Chelsea, that was a horrible game, and then against Arsenal was a cracker. So since that 4-1 loss, you've actually got 20 points out of a possible 24.
It's not bad. It's not bad by any means.
You've actually won six in a row. You've won six in a row. So 9, 10, 14, 15, and 16 goals scored, mate. So pretty exciting times right now for Liverpool again. And likely, who knows, but you're still in. I know Man United's got a game in hand, but I think you could sneak I could knock Man U out of the Champions League.
Yeah, look, again, not outside the realm of possibility, especially with the poor form that United's in of late, the way that they're kind of self-imploding. It's going to be very interesting to see what Ten Hag does towards the end of this season and how he kind of looks to right the ship, because in its simplest form, you know, they've scored 49 goals, but they've also conceded 41 this season at Manchester United. You know, from a top of a table, you know, type of a team, they're not scoring enough in its most simplest form. Compare that to, you know, Liverpool, they've scored 67, they've conceded 42. Compare that to Newcastle perspectives, Newcastle scored 61 and conceded 29. So, you know, from Manchester United's perspective, it's not been good enough in front of goal and definitely not been good enough defensively.
Do you think that they might struggle, guys, knowing that they've got a massive game on the 26th of July against Wrexham in a club friendly? Do you think that that game will kind of, you know, and Ryan Reynolds and Rob McInerney, do you think they'll be eyes on that game?
Oh, they've already looked at that for David De Gea is because he might get a spot in their goal.
Oh, no, not with Ben Foster there.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, I didn't think about ben that. Foster that's on Wrexham. Me. Yeah, that's on me.
No, they've already done their hugs with Ryan. So, man, you, Newcastle, I think, you know, you corrected the ship the last couple of games. I mean, I know you'd lost, but you played back to where you were. Arsenal and Man City, everyone's giving it to Man City right now. But Arsenal's still a point behind. I mean, they're a point behind. So they're still, you know, they put the pressure on City here. City's got the Champions League game against Real Madrid tomorrow. Then they've got Everton back to the Real Madrid second leg of the Champions League. Then they finish off with City, Brighton, Brentford and Man U in the FA Cup. So is it theirs? I mean, it's got to be theirs to lose with a game in hand, surely.
You got to think that because the thing is, like, the expectation is across Manchester City to win this Premier League at this moment. They are favourites to win across the board. You know, look at the way that they're scoring goals on a relentless level. They're, you know, keeping clean sheets. They're in form at the moment. They've been in fantastic fashion of late. They play, you know, visually some of the best football in the league. But that's where there is... little dark horse of Arsenal is popping up and they're just creating that moments of magic. Yes, there were, you know, a couple of games along the last, you know, a few performances where Arsenal had a moment of hiccup. But the thing is, they're finishing strong. And the thing is, again, Arsenal, they're not going down swinging. Like, they are absolutely going for this and putting as much pressure on City as possible. In a way, it kind of reminds me of a few years ago when you had that Liverpool and City race to the top of the table and things basically went down to almost the final game of the season because of how close it was. And I would not put it past Arsenal to be able to get something out of this. You know, three games remaining, they could get pick up all 9 points and all you need is a frustrating team to upset Manchester City as the season's kind of start to wrap up. You know, as we say, if we look at their next game, Everton against City, if Everton is able to put on a defensive masterclass, frustrate City, they pull off like a 0-0 draw in a game like that, that could be the little glimmer of hope that Arsenal needs to be able to lift a trophy at the end of the season.
Or a big injury at the Bernabeu.
And then they've also... Yeah, exactly. And they've also...
Has anyone noticed a discerning change, a distinctive change in Arteta's behaviour?
Yep.
And I think he had to, and I think he's calmed his team down because he seems to have calmed down himself.
Well, you know... it's just a funny football. Is such a funny thing. We all cry out for a player to be dropped or a manager to be dropped. And Arteta was absolutely under the pump a year ago, and you know he could be looking at something unbelievably special. So we're all.
Who's their final three games, Paul?
Who, mate? City's.
No, Arsenal.
Arsenal's. So Arsenal's final three games. They got Brighton on Monday morning, which is going to be a tough one because Brighton. I mean, they've played some of the best football going round.
Brighton have got a hard draw, have got an interesting draw in, haven't they?
They've really
got us
do.
As well, don't they?
I mean, I thought they were cruising into, you know, probably sixth at this point, but that loss this morning. It'll be a tough game for Arsenal against Brighton. I don't think they'll pick up the 3 points there, Pete. I think that might be a draw, mate. They've got Forest, and I think they'll put Forest to the sword. And then they've got Wolves. So, you know, that's a... I think it's a pretty tough draw home, but I mean, I think, yeah, the Brighton game's the big one for me. They have to get something out of that.
Mm.
And Brighton, look, honestly, some of the football Brighton's played this year has been just gorgeous to watch.
Speaking as a supporter of a club who's blown a bigger lead than 1 point that Man City have to lose a title, you know what? It's never over till it's over, is it? It's going to be... No. I think Manchester City have got so many big games coming up.
Well,
and they haven't usually cleaned the season out by winning everything, have they?
No, and look, I mean, this is a simple question for both of you. I think every single Manchester City supporter would obviously want to win everything they could. If they were told now, you have to lose the title to City and you'll win the Champions League, I think 90-something percent would choose the Champions League.
100%. They would shake that hand and absolutely go all for that, because that is the desperation that that club has and the fans have at the moment to win that Champions League.
I just don't want them to win the Champions League for this reason. I don't want to be singing with Villa supporters, "You'll never win that. You'll never sing that. Champions of Europe, you'll never sing that." I just want to hold on to that for a bit longer, guys.
No, that's understandable. And I think you will.
Newcastle, I mean, they could miss the four. I don't think they will. City do have some really big games, and there could be a slip up there for sure. Because whilst they've been, you know, winning games and doing what they have to do, you know, they weren't convincing against Fulham. Yes, they beat West Ham 3-0, but it wasn't a 3-0 game. I thought it was a lot closer than that. And they got 2-0 up against Leeds and then just went to sleep. And Leeds had their chances there. So they're not playing vintage in saying that. They score goals for fun, don't they? Guys, sorry, I was about to ask you a question.
Fire away, my friend.
Every year or so, there's players that we don't condone violence, but there are players that if they got hit in the head, you wouldn't mind.
Yes, I suppose.
Is there a standout player or two for you at the moment that you were just like, oh, if they copped the headbutt, I wouldn't be upset?
Hmm.
I think at Wolves, it would be Diego Costa. But the thing is, he would probably just get back up and go, thanks very much, mate, and keep on running.
No, keep on running? He can barely run now. I mean, him and I in a pie-eating contest, I'm not sure who'd win. But, yes, anyway, for me to have to be the guy out of Ice Age, Bruno Fernandes.
Yep. Okay. I can definitely picture that one.
And it's always Patrick Bamford for me, ever since he went down to the phantom punch against Villa. I'm not sure if you've ever seen the pictures or video of that one.
Yes. I think that there was a footage of Casper being on that field there. So, yeah, not too sure how he got away with that one. I thought he was a friendly ghost, but obviously not.
No, and I'm probably pretty nasty to Bamford there, because I'm sure no, I wouldn't have a beer with him.
Don't step away from it. Just own it, mate. You're right. He's got an awesome haircut.
He does, and I'm envious of that. But Fernandes, I can't stand a player in my team at the moment who continues to whinge nonstop. I just can't stand Buendia whinging every time something that doesn't go his way. I've never been a fan of those players. And Fernandes from Manchester United, I'm not sure I've ever seen someone whinge more. He could score a goal and he'd be whinging that he should have scored 7. Like, he's just so dislikable.
Yeah, and that seems to be going with the whole... Look, this is going to sound really terrible, but it seems to be a bit of a Portuguese football trait in England.
Okay.
No, what I'm talking about is Wolves were.
I'd have to go back and look through
Wolves. I've been talking about an incredible football pedigree, but like, how hard were Wolves to deal with in their manager a couple of months ago?
Oh, yeah, true.
And then you've got him, and it's like, can we stop doing that?
And Cristiano Ronaldo, who, unless he's scoring 6 goals a game,
All right. Anyway, do you want to hear mine?
Yes, I'd love to.
Right, number one's Cry Havertz. Oh, I can't stop.
Yeah, I go with that.
It's a strong word, but I use it. And two, I never really felt like this, but, you know, in the week since the game we played against Everton, and the more that I hear about the condition of Sean Longstaff's ankle after that ridiculous tackle in the corner, everybody, including VAR, seemed to miss him snapping his ankles on him. And Jordan Pickford pushing him back out, I'm putting him on that list.
I can see that. I do have one more, but I would love to hear Pete's, because Pete's a man of love. Pete's a man of compassion.
I'm trying to rack my brain of someone that you know, deserves this type of an honour. I look, purely for the haircut, I'm going to say Nunes at Liverpool.
Yes, plus, and you're a Liverpool man.
Yeah, I know. Just knock the guy out, man. Just sort your bollocks out and get back on. Yeah.
I love how kind you are about that. There is one other player, and he is at your club, John, who seriously, shit haircut, shit attitude. I can't believe you signed him. What a waste of money. Can you guess who I'm talking about there?
With a poor hairstyle?
Absolutely shithouse hairstyle.
No, because Wout Fass is at Leicester.
No. Well, yes, that's a bad one. But you've also got one, an absolute tragic. And he's an absolute dick swab. Anthony Gordon. Why the hell would you sign him? Yeah. He is an absolute dipshit.
He's got the Ronaldo haircut for the World Cup.
Yes, without the looks.
It looks terrible. Yeah, without the goals.
The goals, I mean. wrong Ronaldo. I don't know. He is one of those players, mate. I mean, I can't imagine he's going to endear himself to you guys for too long. I could see him going off to another club pretty quickly, actually. I think you'll still get enough. He's young enough. I think you'll still get a ton of money for him if you do move him on.
Yeah, well, we sell him to Villa.
No, thanks, mate. No. Look, honestly,
he can replace Grealish for you out there.
Hey. Grealish is having a brilliant year for Man City, and I, for one, will never boo that man. He played for us since the age of 7, and I think he's just fit into Man City now. Brilliant. Remember when he signed for Man City, the pressure he was under, and everyone said he's a failure? I don't think he's been a failure this season at all. I think he's been magnificent.
Yeah, and he helped Almiron to have his best year ever.
Oh, guys, one other thing. I think I gave you a second question before we finish off the shambles of a podcast that I've put together here tonight. Absolute shambles because I've just bagged everyone. Here we go. A manager that reminds you of a cartoon figure or some kind of movie kind of villain or whatever. Is there any manager in the comp that kind of gives you those vibes?
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, I can picture so many of them in different formats. So I'll go with former managers is kind of my focus at the moment. So then that way you guys can have a look at who's currently in jobs. Because the thing is, like, Scott Parker's kind of, I feel like I could picture him in the Marvel series, The Eternals. I feel like he's too straight-faced. He's too almost prim and proper and perfect that it would fit into that kind of a Marvel series very well. I think Graham Potter has his moments as well. I feel like he would be one of those, Home Alone villains that becomes a friend in some way and ends up having a positive experience. So he's a very an interesting guy. I think that...
I could see him in a British sitcom as well. As kind of like
I was also thinking if they did a live action version of Wreck-It Ralph, that Ralph Hasselhoff would probably be a good nomination for that. I think that would work quite well. And then, look, if they ever do a Dumb and Dumber, then Nathan Jones is a shoo-in for a football version of that because, as we know.
Well, I'm thinking Frank Lampard could easily be in one of those football hooligan movies as one of the guys that gets beaten up from the opposition supporters. So one of those movies like ID or what were
they? Oh, he's the man that saved Chelsea, mate. Have some respect.
Yeah, true.
I think he'd be better off in the Carry On series.
Oh, I like it. But, that's a good call. I think for me, a guy who is a walking cartoon has to be the manager of Southampton. Man, he I don't mean to be rude, but he'd be the fish you'd throw back in the ocean, wouldn't he?
Look, the answer is probably going to be yes. So Ruben Selyas is his name, and yes, you probably would throw him back if you did catch him.
I think I'm going to lose this podcast, guys. I apologise because someone's going to complain. Actually, no. What's his name? Steve Cooper from Wales. He looks like he's had his head in the microwave for too long.
Jeez,
buddy.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to stick with the standard and say that, you know, I don't really like Jurgen Klopp that much. And he could be Two-Face from Batman.
Yes, he could be.
He shakes your hand if he's winning. and he walks off and carries on if they get beat.
Oh, here's another one. If we did another version of Minions and whatnot, you could have Antonio Conte as Gru.
Oh, yes. You definitely could. Or you could have Sam Allardyce, if you get a big mo on him, he could be Mike Bassett, football manager. I can't remember the name. Is that the one, Mike Bassett?
Yeah. I feel like that would be more of a Jesse Marsh type of a situation as well.
Yeah, true.
He could also do
Ted. We've really bagged out the managers here, and I'm loving it.
No, you have.
Me? I've been quite polite.
By the way, here's a quick game of categories for you. There have been 13 managers who have been sacked so far this season in the Premier League. We're going to go a quick game of, name a manager, and we'll go tat for tat. So, John, would you like to name a manager who has been sacked from the Premier League season this year?
Frank Lampard.
You are correct. There's one.
Jesse Marsh.
You are correct. Two.
Well, you go.
What's the name of that clown from Wolves that I couldn't stand?
That's right.
I've forgotten his name already because he just drove me spare. I'll go with Hasenhüttl.
Correct. There's three.
I can't say his name, so that's good, isn't it? Well, Nathan Jones, definitely.
Correct. Four.
I've got one other name, I reckon.
All right. Let's just go through the clubs. Oh, Vieira.
Oh, damn it. I think that was the only one.
There's five.
Oh. There's a couple of easy ones here. There's a couple of easy ones. Rogers from Leicester.
Correct. Six.
He was good too, wasn't he? Let's go. What's his name? He's now the coach of
I've got one I'm waiting for. You guys don't know who I'm
going to
say.
It's amazing how quickly you forget. So I've got Chelsea.
Which one, mate?
Potter?
Well, at Potter at which moment? Because unfortunately, Ben Sachs twice.
The first one, the one, the little German who's like the skinniest dude who's ever been involved in the Premier League.
Oh, Tuchel.
Yeah, yes. That's him. Yeah,
Thomas Tuchel.
I wouldn't have got him without that.
Fantastic.
I'm going to give you one, John. Aston Villa.
I was going to say, the Villa coach. Oh, yep. Stevie G.
Correct.
How good was he going?
Now, Leeds is...
You've got four left, from what I can see.
Haven't Leeds sacked two managers this year?
Yeah, I don't know the second person's name, because they've only just sacked him, I think. Have we said Jones from Southampton?
Bournemouth sacked their manager.
Did they? Oh, yeah.
Start of the year.
You gave us the heads up on that one. So.
Yes, I did.
I've gone blank.
Scotty Parker.
Scott Parker.
Yes, that's got to be it, doesn't
Scott
it?
Scott Parker's gone.
Last
season.
This season, so Antonio Conte was correct. Yep.
I know. I'm done.
Wolves. So the two names which you haven't mentioned were Bruno Lage from Wolves and Javi Garcia.
Who?
Javi Garcia from Leeds, who's just been sacked.
Lars, given how much time and effort I put into not liking him, I still hate him because I couldn't get him in that quiz to close it out.
So before we go, guys, out of that list of managers, I'll go two questions on this one. First one, did anyone there surprise you? Because I could say that Vieira did surprise me.
Yeah, Tuchel. So early.
Oh, yeah, Tuchel, that definitely.
See, they really got kicked on after they got rid of him.
What about Vieira and Conte? Did they surprise you?
Antonio Conte, unfortunately, no. He unfortunately had a lot of personal issues which were affecting how he was managing, not only from a club perspective, but from a mental, personal perspective.
Yeah,
so, unfortunately, I didn't really get surprised by that. Patrick Vieira, I did... I was somewhat surprised because of the big dip in form, but when you lose so many games in a row, unfortunately, the cards have already been dealt for you. So for me, kind of no real surprise there. Look, to be honest, I don't think that there's a great deal of surprise from anyone. Even the fact that Graham Potter was at Chelsea for just a short period of time, I still wasn't really surprised by any of it.
He walked into a mess, and he's also, it just didn't feel like it was his cup of tea there, picking up all those pieces. And I mean, apparently the locker room, they haven't got enough lockers in the change room for how big the squad is. And I thought that was a joke, but apparently that's real.
That is very much true. From what I've heard, basically the first day of kind of pre-season at Chelsea, because they end up having, I think they've got 4 or 5 full-size football fields across the training grounds there. Basically the first day of pre-season where everyone is back, all of those football fields are completely full of basically all their loan players and all their squad players, all their youth teams and all that kind of stuff. So unfortunately, it is very much true.
Out of that list,
it'd have to be Tuchel who'd be the one most likely to get another gig somewhere else in Europe, or like a big gig.
Hasn't he got one? Isn't he at Bayern?
Oh, are you serious? Of course.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's it, right. There we go. So that's...
he's hoping to get a bigger job than that.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to do. But some of those others, I mean, I could never see Stevie G getting another Premier League job, or it's going to be a decade. He was a...
Funny enough, Steven Gerrard's also been linked of late to the Poland national team job.
Yeah,
that's quite an interesting one for him.
That's been a couple months on the cards there, and that might suit him. You know, you're not doing the day-to-day. You're able to do a lot of scouting. You probably work with the younger teams and so forth. That might suit him, to be honest. Because
it might suit the rest of Europe to have him working with Poland.
Yeah, so Poland doesn't make the Euros or the World Cup.
How do you feel about that, Pete?
Look, to be honest, it's going to be quite an interesting one, because the thing is, I feel like if he was to take a national team job, the biggest thing that needs to happen for him to be able to be successful is he actually needs probably his best mate and head coach over at Rangers in Michael Beale to come across and support him as well.
Who did a hell of a lot of good training behind the scenes.
Correct.
Congratulations to Burnley and Sheffield United on their promotion to the Premier League. We now have Luton, Middlesbrough, Coventry and Sunderland after this morning's final round of games who will be playing off. Is that the final round of games? Sorry? Yes.
Yeah, that's the playoffs now.
That's the playoffs.
Sunderland and Luton.
Now, what amazing four teams there in a way. Luton, Middlesbrough, Coventry and Sunderland. You know, I had a bit of an affiliation with Luton when I was younger, and we have loved Sunderland till our die. I wish I'd have kept going, to be honest. But a lot of people are getting behind Coventry.
Yeah, and look, to be honest, they're a classic little historic football team who have, you know, like I say, plenty of history in the top flight of English football. They've got plenty of trophies in their cabinet as well. And the thing is, they're a side that has played some fantastic football of late. From memory, let me double check that I'm correct here, but Coventry City actually managed by Mark Robbins, who is, he's not an Englishman, but there's a couple of English, sorry, he's not an Aussie, but there's a couple of Aussie connections in Coventry. And there's obviously been a couple of Aussie players who have played for Coventry previously. Yep. Danny Teato and John Aloisi, from memory, were both at Coventry back in the early 90s. So, you know, there's some good little link-ups there. It'll be very interesting to see, because Coventry have played some great football of late. Most recently, they actually played out a 1-1 draw with Middlesbrough just a few days. Actually, it was earlier on today, to be honest. Yeah. So it'll be quite interesting to see how they go when they play off against each other in the Championship semi-finals.
Well, I spoke to my very good friend Will, the lead singer of Goodwill Remedy, on Saturday night, and he's a Macam through and through. And I said, I think you guys are a team of destiny. And I just looked at that last game and how they sort of come up with them from last year. And you know how teams get on a roller, go bang, bang.
Yep.
And, you know, I kind of fancy them to get to Wembley. It'll be a gluten-free Wembley, a Luton-free Wembley. And, you know what? And he was saying how he's pretty scared about the idea of them actually going up. Don't think they're ready. I said, take your chances.
Oh, what
you said before, Paul. Yeah, take your chances. You never know when they'll come again, especially with a big club like Sunderland. You work it out on the fly. It's exciting, and they play exciting football. Well, and a big shout-out to their manager who left halfway through the year and went to Stoke.
Toughest competition in the world there too, guys, because, you know, the teams that are getting relegated, Reading, Blackpool and Wigan, they all scored over 40 points. You're scoring over 40 points, and I know there's 40-odd games, but that's almost a point a game for each of those three clubs, and they're going down. It's just pretty amazing, isn't it? Like, how tight the competition is. And Cardiff would have been breathing a sigh of relief, losing their last two games and surviving by 1 point. They survived by a few points. Sorry, I dead set wrong there. Apologies. But, you know, congratulations to those teams, and good luck if you follow Luton, Middlesbrough, Coventry or Sunderland on your promotion chances. It's unbelievable. You know, finals from here on in. Playing at Wembley, it's an amazing experience. So if whoever does come up, there's going to be a story for all four of those, isn't there? Middlesbrough have scored the second most goals in the whole of the championship with 84 goals, only three goals behind Burnley. So, yeah.
If you want to see Wembley bursting at its seams, and I mean fully bursting, and the size of the game, if it was Sunderland and Middlesbrough for that playoff, would be outrageous, and anybody who knows football and knows the Northeast knows that's a fact.
And it's going to be completely red, that stadium, wouldn't it? It'd be absolutely amazing, guys. It's been a lot of fun. I've missed you very, very much. I know we missed out on a few things over the last few months, but I've missed our Premier League talk. So I'm hoping we can get back on a bit more regularly.
Absolutely. Awesome. Very much looking forward to it. And look, hopefully everyone's hamstrings are holding up just better than Jurgen Klopp's. If not, you know, keep on celebrating and hopefully you all warm up well.
And a big shout out to all my Portuguese friends. I was talking in general about some players and managers in the Premier League.
good luck to all the managers I just bagged. I'm sure that... thanks for listening to another episode of the Love Sport podcast. This was the EPL edition. Teams are going to be going to Europe. There's definitely going to be teams going down. It's now getting harder and harder. Southampton definitely gone, as we've said. Everton have got themselves out of a bit of trouble. Leicester still there. Leeds in big trouble. It's all to play with a few rounds to go. But hey, someone has to go down. This was the Love Sport Podcast.